Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hi, this is Real Stories and I am your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I have Rachel Druckenmiller and she's calling from Baltimore and she is the founder and CEO of a company called Unmuted. Hello, Rachel.
Hi.
Lovely to, you know, finally, because I think we've been wanting to talk for a while, to finally have this conversation. So first of all, I'm going to dive in deep and ask you about this title, Unmuted. The title of your company is Unmuted. Yes. What's that about? I mean, it's obvious, isn't it, really, with regards to your voice, but where did that whole idea come from?
You know, I think it comes from how I felt the opposite of that for a lot of my life growing up. You know, a lot of us, there's a professor out of Harvard named Dana Jack, and one of the concepts and that she's come up with is something called self-silencing, which is that we have this tendency to not use our voices to speak up, to share what we think or feel or want or desire because we're afraid of, you know, being too much or not enough, or we're afraid of rejection, or we're afraid of judgment, or we're afraid of being perceived as inadequate or weak. And so we don't speak up and we silence ourselves and how we really feel. And so I did that a lot growing up and I was a really quiet and timid kid. When I tell people now as an adult, because I'm very extroverted. For anyone who spent more than like 5 minutes with me, I'm very extroverted and outgoing and pretty talkative and comfortable in my own skin and all of that. And I sing on social media for people I don't even know. And if I had told my 8-year-old self that I would be like that as, you know, as an adult, there's no way I would have believed it. And right now as an adult, a lot of people, when I tell them that I was a very shy and timid and guarded child, they don't believe that either. So for me, it's just this testament to how we can evolve as human beings and how who we've been doesn't have to become who we end up as. And, you know, as somebody who did silence myself, whether it was, you know, somebody who loved to write but didn't share it with people, or who loved to sing but wouldn't do so publicly because of just this crippling fear of judgment or of messing up in some way. Someone who really, you know, struggled with feeling like I didn't fit in or belong, and, you know, dealt with some witnessing my parents' marital challenges growing up, which ended up being resolved. But there were so many things that I felt that I never expressed to anyone but the pages of my journals. And so as an adult, I've had this experience that's really been a process. It's not like one day I woke up and I was suddenly outgoing and bold and wearing peacock print yoga pants, and like, it did not happen.
I love that peacock yoga pants. You need to get me a pair. I like the idea of that.
Lineage wear. Well, it's funny because I was at this event. This is an example of a step of the unmuting process. I was at this yoga event in Baltimore at the Baltimore Zoo, like maybe 4 years ago. And I saw this woman wearing these like neon green peacock print, like these giant peacock feathers. I mean, all the things that tell you not to draw attention to your lower half. It was like breaking up.
No, that's brilliant. I love that. I love when people kind of own themselves as well, kind of take that control and say, you know what, I'm going to do print and print. I love when people are brave enough to do that, wear print and never print. I love that.
That's what I saw. I was like, where did you get those? And she told me. So I went online and that day I ordered a pair of peacock print yoga pants. And I was like, let me tell you, I wore uniforms for 12 years. I didn't even own jeans in high school. I wore khaki pants for everything. And I wore like 50 shades of pastel shirts. I would get like one shirt and like 10 different colors if I liked it. And I wore no prints. I did not wear bold colors. It was almost like I didn't really want to be seen.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. I want to go a little bit deeper into that, because that's what I find quite interesting. Because, as you said, it's quite clear you are very comfortable in your skin now. You're an extrovert. You wear the bright colors and you're quite bold. And that's how people will see you now. But why did you feel that you were almost silenced as a child? What was really going on there to make you feel that you feel like you couldn't express yourself? What was happening on a deeper level? Or just pick one story that maybe that you feel that, you know.
Yeah, where that comes from. Mm. I mean, I think my parents tell me, they're like, from the time you were really little, you would just like sit in your crib for like hours and entertain yourself. Like you just were a very observant child. And so part of it was temperament. But I really think what activated the almost protective mode that I went into was when I was about 5 years old. My parents were going through a difficult phase in their marriage, and there was a lot of yelling and fighting. And we moved out, my brother and I moved out in an apartment with my mom for what I thought, literally until I was 27 years old and going through premarital counseling with my husband, I thought my parents had been separated for, I don't know, maybe 6 to 9 months, if not longer. And I went and asked my parents to confirm, and they were like, it was maybe two.
Okay.
Maybe two or three months, Rachel. And so, you know, as kids, and one of the things that was brought to my attention was in the face of chaos like that and dysfunction, people generally have one of two responses. Of course, this is overgeneralizing, but they have a response of one becomes the golden child, and one says, okay, everything around me seems, I don't like what's going on. I don't feel like I can control it. So I am going to be the one who has it all together all the time. Mm. And I am not going to bring too much attention, you know, to myself, but I'm just going to be good. And so I got really good at being a good girl.
Yes. Yes. And I want to ask you in relationships that, because you mentioned, you know, you can go one of either way. So are you you and your brother, so you're the oldest or the youngest?
I'm the oldest by 15 months.
Okay. Oh, by 15 months. Oh, wow. The reason I ask that is because it's so interesting, isn't it? Because there's loads of books out there in terms of how we deal with things, in terms of being the firstborn, the secondborn, the middle child, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. So it's just interesting, as you said, that you, and I feel that's quite an older child thing, actually, is to adopt the golden child thing, because you just want to have an easy life. Do you think there was a little bit of that was going on?
Yeah, well, it was funny you asked that, because before this podcast, I was listening to an older episode of Unlocking Us with Brené Brown. And one of the things she talks about is over-functioning and under-functioning in response to anxiety, and how in her, you know, just in her sort of experience without having like a full, you know, slate of research behind it, has recognized that often people that are over-functioners are firstborns,
yeah,
more often than not. And under-functioners tend to be the babies of the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's almost like I was over-functioning of like, I'll just be all together. I'll be fine all the time. I won't show you when I'm struggling. I won't show you when I'm sad. I won't show you when I'm scared. I'll just be together all the time, because then I won't be causing any more problems, and maybe things will get better.
Mm, that's interesting. That's interesting, that reference to Brené Brown as well, because I mean, I do love reading about books. I'm the youngest in my family, so it's interesting what you said. But I think the youngest sometimes are observers. You observe a lot. And then with the eldest, interesting, sometimes there is a warrior energy with the oldest, because there's a responsibility that you haven't asked for necessarily, but it's just an unconscious responsibility that you kind of sometimes adopt as a child, and then maybe as an adult it takes a while to release those layers. So I want to fast forward a little bit, because you've given me a little bit of a picture of, you know, you as a young person, and, you know, your parents going through their own difficulties, but like overcoming them, which is lovely to hear as well, when people kind of overcome those challenges too. But, you know, how did you find your voice? What moment did you realize, or what happened that you realized that, okay, it's okay to really come out of myself and be me. At what moment did you, like, what was the first moment? Because it must have been loads, but what's the first moment that you felt that?
The story that I most connect back to that really I think was precipitated by something else was when I was in college. I was a junior in college. I spent my fall semester living in southern Spain in Granada. And as somebody who had never left the United States before and had never been further west than West Virginia, and by the way, it's not that far for anyone. You know, growing up on the East Coast, I'd never been to Florida, you know, and here I was, you know, 20 years old. So I was not much of a risk taker, and it was a risk for me to leave everything that I knew and to go study abroad. I only knew one other classmate who was going to be in the same city as I was. And, you know, I kind of laughed it off when my professor first suggested I go, because I wasn't fluent in Spanish. But so I went on this trip, and the Spanish culture is such a vibrant and alive and bold in every way culture, like the food, the music, the colors, the vegetation, the laughter. It's a noisy culture. It's just this place where you can't help but kind of come alive.
Wow.
And, you know, I had left behind a boy that I really liked that I thought we were going to be dating, and he was going to wait for me when I got back, and that lasted about 2 weeks, and you know, devastated. But it gave me this experience to be fiercely independent, because, you know, I was living with a woman and her granddaughter, and, you know, meals and all that kind of stuff was taken care of for me. But just to be in a place where, you know, I wasn't my first language, you know, I had to get out of my shell more, because it was such a social culture. I was almost never alone.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, that's brilliant. That's, I suppose, compared to a culture which you were coming from, that's quite hard to kind of adopt to, isn't it, really? And especially from a small family, because it's just two of you, isn't it, really? That's quite intenseness to all this vibrancy. Did you feed off that vibrancy? Did you become that way? Was that part of you spreading your wings, so to speak?
Yeah, I think I got more comfortable. And so I know I haven't mentioned her yet, but I have a sister who's the caboose in our family, who's 9 years younger than me.
Okay. Oh, right, so you do have the young. Oh, okay. But that big, there's another big gap there as well. It's a difference, isn't it? Yeah.
Like once they healed their marriage, they were like, all right, we're going to have another one. But so yeah, I mean, in that culture, you know, I did have to get a little more comfortable with taking risk and putting myself out there and introducing myself to people. And, you know, when I came back from that, I had joined gospel choir in college because you did not have to try out. So
that's so funny. I love that.
Brilliant. Like, everybody's in. You want to be in, you want to sing, everybody's in. So there's like 80 people, you know. I went to a small school, maybe like, you know, 2,000 kids. And
yeah.
And so I was in a gospel choir rehearsal in February of 2005, and they were doing tryouts for the spring concert for solos. And I waited until everybody left except for the director and the assistant director. And I went up to him and I said, I would like to try out for a solo. And so I went to the microphone, and he sat at the piano, and I just closed my eyes. And I'm in this huge chapel. So it used to be a Methodist affiliated college. And so there's this gigantic chapel on campus, and I'm in this very empty chapel with just these two other guys. And I just let myself sing.
Beautiful.
And I look back on that and remember that. And he's so charismatic. And he gets up, from the piano, and he like knocks over a microphone stand, and he's like, where'd that come from?
What did you sing, Rachel?
The song, it's called, When I Rose This Morning is the song. It's said by a group called Mississippi Mass Choir sings it. And it's a pretty intense I'm like, this is my early morning froggy voice, but I don't know. It's a pretty intense song. It's like it's a loud song. It's a gospel. Oh,
brilliant. Give us two lines from it. Go on. Like, I can't not ask you to sing now. You've told me. Okay. Give us a feeling. So, because I don't know it.
I'm gonna try. My voice, one of my voice coaches, Darcy Webb, says, forget the notes, sing the intention. So
yes, go for it.
All right, here we go. Okay. This morning when I rose, yeah, I didn't have no doubt. This morning when I rose, yeah, I didn't have no doubt. That's what I'll give you.
Oh, that's absolutely amazing. Wow. That is wow. Rachel, you know what? This is totally where your voice has been born. And it's almost like your voice is your gift in so many ways. And it's so interesting how that was suppressed for so long. But I feel it's a beautiful story that through music and also through gospel music, you found your voice. I just love that. I love it. I think it's such a powerful story. And it's just that just proves everything that I believe in, because I believe in the power of the arts, and whether it is singing or it's acting or it's drawing, I think that releases so much in your soul and it can help people in such a powerful way to the point that it's healing. So that is just absolutely beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Rachel. I know I put you on the spot there, but thank you.
Sure. I was like, I have to. It's kind of like, well, the funny thing is, fast forward to 2019.
Yeah.
When I was going through a professional speaking training, and I was just telling the story about gospel choir and how I went from being somebody who silenced myself and wouldn't sing in front of anybody and would literally lip sync in the pews in Catholic church if I thought anybody could hear me, to being somebody singing for 500 people a gospel song on a stage by myself. I mean, that was like a stark contrast to me. And so I was telling that story, and I had never sung on stage before as a speaker. And I at the last minute, when I was working with my writing coach, threw it in the script. And I was like, should I sing this? I mean, you know, this can go terrible. We've all been in situations where we've seen this go horribly wrong. Oh, cringy, you know, you're like sitting there, someone's singing, you're like, oh, this is so kitschy, and like, just please, you know. And I was like, I never want to be that person who is like embarrassing myself, you know. And my writing coach was like, you're telling a story about finding your voice and you sing and you're not gonna sing, no, you're gonna put that in there.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. And then I added and sang on stage, and it's been, you know, history from there is I've now been incorporating it into pretty much everything I do. And people, even on like LinkedIn, are like, sing us another song. I'm like, guys, you got to give me some recommendations. There's like, what do you want to hear? You know, it usually comes to me in a moment of like, Teresa Quinlan, you know, we have conversations. She's like, are you somebody who, when you're just in conversation and somebody says a phrase and it triggers a song lyric and you just burst into song? I was like, I absolutely do that.
No, I think that's brilliant. No, I just think that's absolutely brilliant. That you just feel, because obviously you feel it, don't you? And yep. I suppose you're just talking about musical theatre, because I said, I've always loved musical theatre. And it is so great that you the gospel, the musical theatre, just when you love a song, there is a story. And I think what's beautiful about musical theatre is that you are telling your story through that song, you know, and there is an emotion that's attached to whatever you're singing. And sometimes, for me, it doesn't even matter sometimes if it's a bit pitchy. You know, like sometimes you might have some actors that sing certain roles, and they might not be the best singers, but they've got the emotion. Yes. And you kind of feel the emotion of that character. So I feel for me, so like singing for me, because I belong to a choir as well, singing for me is really, really, really healing. And it's so lovely to hear it. So I can't sing like you. I'll be honest, I can't sing like you. That was...
You sing like you. We need you to sing like you. We gotta let you. We gotta
totally. But it's not my gift. I don't feel that's my gift. I enjoy it, but it's not... I know it's not my gift, but I do enjoy it. But it's just so lovely to hear such a powerhouse behind that. So what do you do if I'm you? Do you help people find their voice, so to speak? I mean, that's what you do, really.
You know, it's part of what I do. I work with leadership teams and organizations and associations. I'm often brought in, you know, my background's in well-being. So I've spent 13 years in the well-being industry, you know, as a thought leader in that space. And I speak a lot about resilience because of some of my own experiences around, you know, getting knocked down, whether it was just the challenges, the inherent challenges of not fitting in and then finding a place to belong or burning it. You know, I had some, had quite a few health issues for most of my life. And, you know, I burned out 3 years ago and then I got hit by a car 3 months ago at the start of COVID.
Oh no. Oh my God. Wow. That is, yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So there's all that. So it's like resilience is naturally, it's sort of like your, what is it? Robin Roberts or somebody said, like, you know, make your mess your message. And so for me, part of it has been, you know, helping people, you know, through these difficult experiences, you know, working with leaders and their teams on how to build resilience. But also I'm asked to teach and to support and guide people for how to elevate their voice for influence and impact and to step into their strengths. So a lot of my work is around, you know, strengths-based leadership, like really looking for the best in people and organizations and helping people, particularly emerging leaders and women leaders, I'm often asked to work with, helping them to use their voice more courageously and confidently. So it's sort of like this twofold, you know, I'm doing, it's really all connected in some way to using your voice, because to be resilient, you have to advocate for yourself and you have to ask for the help that you need and you have to talk to yourself in a kind and compassionate way. And then the other pieces of it are more clearly related to voice of really helping people step into the fullness of who they are and come alive, you know, because when people are alive, it's can feel alive and act alive and are vibrant. It's contagious.
Yes. Yes. And I feel we need more of that energy, don't we? I always feel that really, because sometimes it's like when you go to a seminar, you go to something, you need that speaker, because you'll have a range of speakers, won't you? But you need that speaker that's going to lift the audience up. Otherwise you could just fall asleep, can't you? Yeah, exactly. No, you definitely wouldn't. You definitely wouldn't. That's what I mean. I feel like you've got just so much energy that you know, it's just, I know it'd be fun to be in a room because it's an inspiring energy. There's even a tone in your speaking voice as well as I'm speaking to you now, where that vibrancy is like, here, we're going to act. We're here to do some action. We're not here to sit and talk about things. You're going to make sure things happen. That's what I'm getting from you. You know, you're not going to just
sit. Oh, absolutely. Like I speak the way that I like to be, spoken to, which is a bit of a bias, but you know, I like to be in a room. If someone's just rah, rah, like, oh yeah, go out and do it. Like, do what, you know?
Totally. What's the first step? No, you've got to kind of take action really. Otherwise you just stay in the same place, don't you really? And that could be from an emotional standpoint as well, really, isn't it? You've got to just do what makes you feel good. And I love what you said when you said, elevate your voice for strength and impact. And I think that is what you're about, most definitely, definitely. So I'm going to ask you another thing. I'm going to ask you two questions because I cannot ask you this. But who really inspires you? That's the first question. And the second question is, if you've got to tell me what's your favourite track as well, because we're talking about music here. So just give me who inspires you first and why. And then what's your favourite piece of music? And why? Those two questions, I just want to put those out to you.
Yeah, gosh, oh man, a lot of people inspire me. The one who I think has really been the most catalytic in my journey, I would say, is my dad. My dad came from a really rough upbringing. And he is shockingly... who he has become as a kind and humble and gentle and encouraging and alive. I mean, he's 70 and he was supposed to be doing the Ironman triathlon in Lake Placid, which is 140.6 miles of swimming, biking, and running.
Oh, wow. He was
supposed to be doing his seventh one this past Sunday, but because of COVID, they canceled it. And he is somebody who just is a he has this desire to learn and to create, and he has this insatiable curiosity. And so I model so much of how I am and who I am and the realness. He's just real. And talking about real stories, you know, he is somebody who inspires me to just be really, to just be honest, you know, and to be kind of unfiltered. And he also has a little witty sense of humor. And so I feel like I get some of that from him. So in terms of somebody who, and he when I struggled growing up, he was my really safe place. He was the one that when I felt sad or like I didn't belong, he was one of the few people that I felt like saw me in a way that other people didn't.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And that's lovely to find that with your father as well. Do you know what I mean? That's such a lovely thing to say about your father. And he's still about, I can't believe he's about to do the Iron Man thing. That's incredible. In his 70s. Yeah. Wow.
He's done six of them.
Power to him.
This would be his seventh one. He's done six. And he's in better shape than I am. And he's twice my age. We're not going to talk about that.
I'll have to follow his Instagram now. See his Instagram.
Iron lessons. I don't even know. How do I do Instagram? And I'm like, Dad, you have to like post on it if you're going to be on Instagram.
But... Oh God, no, that's brilliant. That's a beautiful. And then my second question that I was bursting to ask you, as I said, was what's your favorite song and why?
Oh gosh, I have so many favorites. It's
what's
funny.
Your today? Favorite song today.
Well, my favorite for today, I really like the song. I have a playlist called my Peacock playlist.
Oh.
Because it's like, you know, my here I am, you know. I love the song Defying Gravity from Wicked.
Oh, so do I. Oh, I love that. That key change is incredible, isn't it? When she's an incredible singer as well, isn't she? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Hashtag singing goals, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I do my own version of it. Certainly I can't hit those notes, but that
sure
song.
You can. Yeah.
You're right, I can. If I hone my voice, all right, I got to hone it. That's what I'm going to do. So in a year from now, I'm going to work with a vocal coach and we're going to do another episode talking about the song Defying Gravity.
Mm.
But you know, it's like something has changed within me. Something like the lyric of that song, the lyrics of that song, really hit me about maybe 2.5 or 3 years ago. It's probably 3 years ago. I was recovering from burnout, and I had this experience on my birthday. I had a group of people in my community. My husband and I go to a really small church, and we're really connected to our community. And I said, I want to enter into this year with intentionality. And so I had them do this like prayer circle around me where each of them, we were maybe like a dozen to 14 people, were all around me in a friend's basement. And for an hour, they just really like spoke like truth and life over me. And said these things of how they see me. And it was so affirming, you know, you are being like strengthened to strengthen other people. And, you know, you are someone who sees in people what others miss. And, you know, just, they said such beautiful things that were so life affirming that it just really shifted. It was like creating a new identity of how I saw myself. And I think it was either that later that summer or a year after that, I just really got connected to the lyrics of that song of, you know, like something has changed within me. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. You know, like it was this, cause then I went out on my own and started my own business in September after being with the same company for, you know, 13 years. And it was just, I really felt that of like something has changed, you know, and I'm not who I was. And I'm going to defy gravity, and I'm going to go where even I didn't imagine I could go. And, or maybe where I did imagine. I got a pretty big imagination. I've got some really big goals in my life. I'm like, all right. I'm like, I want to be, you know, an Oprah Super Soul Sunday one day. I don't believe that's off limits. I don't have any logical reason to believe that, but
yeah.
Whatever. Right. Like dream big and defy totally. Gravity.
And I love the Super Soul. It's brilliant. I love the Super Souls too. I'd love to be on that program too. But yeah, no, I love that because I never seen Wicked because I saw it in Victoria. Was it Victoria Apollo? And that was just absolutely out of this world. And it is one of those stories because it is like it's pre The Wizard of Oz, isn't it? And that whole idea of her, how she becomes Wicked And that's so, I think that's life, isn't it? Because nobody's born wicked, are they?
Right.
It's through the struggles, it's through the challenges, it's through everything, you know, that you have, that sometimes you can become, it's either light or kind of bitter, but then as she kind of overcomes and just rises up, I love it. I love it as well. So it's such a great example, and like you say, a lovely representation of what you believe in as well. I'm going to bring it to a close now, but I've had so much fun talking to you, Rachel.
Yeah, I really have.
It's been like talking from Wicked musical theatre to gospel choirs. I kind of want you to sing again. Can you sing us out? I want you to do, and can you sing us out something? Because just that first couple of words, something has changed within me with regards to Wicked. Can you sing us out? I've never asked one to do that, but I'm going to ask you to do that.
Yeah, okay.
Go for it. Just about two or three lines.
Yeah.
Go for it.
And that does get a little pitch, you know, it's that key change, we know, right? Like, but yeah, we can go there. We can do that. I'll do it for you, Tanya. I've not done this for other people, but I will do it for you.
For the emotion, just do it, like I say, just like your coach says, just go with the emotion. I'm feeling that something has changed within me. I don't know all the lyrics as good as you, but then go for it.
Okay. So it goes. Something has changed within me. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Too late to go back to sleep. It's time to trust my instincts, close my eyes, and leap.
Oh, amazing. And then we go into defining gravity. I was about to go... And I love it. Thank you so much. That's amazing. I think this is one of my favorite podcasts of the week. And I can't believe I've just said that, but it is, because I just love the music. Thank you so much. And I'm just going to say, from Tanya the Communication Doctor and my unmuted Rachel Druckin Miller, adios.
Bye.
Phrase from this show is, you know, you can try so hard, but it's so important to unmute yourself and just be you. And it was really interesting as we spoke about the words to the song. So I'm going to repeat those words. Something has changed within me. Something is not the same. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Too late to go back to sleep. It's time to trust my instincts. Close my eyes. And leap. Really, really, really powerful lyrics, and I think it's a great way to end the show. So trust your instinct and leap. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. And to listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.